Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's it like to be a comedian, TV host, radio host, an actor? Well, find out right now. Raw Fusion. Welcome to the King B's Raw Fusion Podcast.
Yeah. It's been a long time. I should have left you without a strong show to flip to. Now think of how many weeks shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm about to bless you with another season, another reason to cut on the TV and start the cheesing. To get up on the phone and go call your friends and let them know the King B's Raw Fusion begins. Sit on back and enjoy yourself. I'll be your company, baby. If you need a little help, I took off for a while to revise the plan. Got my focus on so I can check out the scam and open up my team. Eliminate the fake. And when he got me a beat from Bobby Drake, and now I'm back, and it's better than you ever saw. But enough talk, let's get raw.
A typical night at the clubs.
Let's get raw.
You don't want to fall in love.
Let's get raw.
You got the fusion in your blood.
Let's get raw.
Into my ladies and my thugs.
Let's get raw. Into the haters on the scene.
Let's get raw.
Don't be mad, cause we got green.
Let's get raw.
You should be trying to make the team.
Let's get raw.
Cause we taking everything.
Let's get raw.
Raw Fusion.
Hey, it is super producer Lisa Ian. You know what time it is right now. That's right. It's time for Raw Fusion with the one and only wonderful host, my man, King B.
Ow. Ladies and gentlemen, we have in the building. I can't even just say one thing about this guy. He does so much. Just say it. The destined legend, Leon Rogers. What's happening, brother?
My man, King B. What's happening, brother?
I'm chilling, man. You know, I'm in this new space, man. It's a podcast space, man. What's going on with you, man?
Man, working, man. Nose to the grindstone, trying to be that millionaire, man. Get them streams of revenue going and, you know, trying to sit on a boat within the next 2 or 3 years and not have to do nothing.
Man, let me tell you something. I tell people all the time. There's a lot of people in this business that run around talking about they're busy. And they ain't doing shit. You know, just, in real life, they just sitting at the crib watching the game and shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You, my brother, I mean, goddamn, you fucking with, like, you know, James Brown status on being busy, bro. It's like, you know, you got the radio show.
Yeah.
All right, WGCI in the mornings.
Yep. Kyle and Kendra. Yep.
Yeah. Which is funny, and we'll get to it. I just had Lisa E on the show last week.
Shout out to Lisa E. That's my dog, man. One of the best producers I've ever had back in the day. Yeah, she's good people.
She's definitely dope. Then you have the Fox TV show.
Later with Leon, man. It started out on Fox 32 Chicago. It was coming on every night at like 10:30, right after the news. But then COVID hit and shut the studios down. And then I got picked up by Fox Soul, which is an affiliate of Fox. And it's a streaming network, all urban programming, all black programming, man. And I'm just proud to be a part of that. So when the studios open back up, I will be shooting my show from those studios, but it'll be on Fox Soul and Fox 32 Chicago at night.
Make sure you guys tune in, man.
And making moves, man. We're going to be right up there with Hulu and all these other streaming services in a minute.
Okay, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. And then, okay, well, they're all probably bread and butter at this point, but damn it, you're a comedian still.
Oh, yeah. That's the number one love. Like, if I couldn't do anything else, to be able to stand on stage and entertain hundreds of people or thousands of people, that's the number one goal. That's what got me everything I got now.
All right. So here's the thing. I've known you for more than a decade. I actually remember, I don't know if you remember this, before you got the job over at GCI, we were doing the penis dialogues.
Yes. Me, B-Cole, Tiffany, and Cookie. Yes. It's a good time.
And B. Cole had just come from doing his week. They were looking for a new host, a a comedian, and B. Cole had done his week, and they were bringing on different comedians every week. Mm-hmm. Your week was the next week after that.
Which I was mad. I was mad at my week at WGCI. Mm-hmm. Well, so Elroy Smith, man, a brilliant brother, one of the greatest program directors in the history of radio.
Yes.
Put out a competition to get a new comedian to replace Tony Scofield on the Crazy Howard McGee Morning Show because Tony was moving to afternoons. He was getting his own show. Every comic had a great week. My week, for some reason, my last day was September 11th. So, and I think it was like a Friday too, like a Thursday or a Friday. It was a Friday. It was some towards the end of the week because I was mad. You know what I'm saying? I've been rocking this whole week. Now on Friday, we coming with this September 11th shit. Okay, so we're 5 years removed from the tragedy on U.S. soil. And the whole show, of course, is going to be dedicated to that. People calling in, where were you at? And I'm just like, there's no space for me to be funny. So I thought I was being screwed over. And after doing that, I went to the back. I was a little hot. Elroy was like, ask me how I go. I said, how you think, man? September 11th, bro. Like, what am I going to talk about? You know what I'm saying? I lose a day. Everybody else got their full week. And he said, well, I know you could be funny. I wanted to hear, could you be serious? And you didn't disappoint me. So are you going to continue to be mad? Or are you going to sign this contract and welcome to the team?
Damn.
That's dope. I was like, wow. I said, this dude really is Phil Jackson, Jack. Like, you know what I'm saying? He's coaching it up. But I was so focused on being funny. He was like, I know you can be funny. Every comic I brought in here can be funny. But I put all of you all in situations where you had to speak your mind and show the world that you read a book, that you read a paper, or you watch the news, or you're closely locked in on what's going on in the city and the country. And he said, and this is why I want you here on this show, which led to me staying and getting my own Saturday show and everything else. So I'm forever grateful to Elroy Smith for that opportunity.
Yeah, I met Elroy once at the when we were interviewing Alicia Keys. And he was like, yeah, man, hit me up. We'll talk about something. Nothing happened from that, but he was a good guy.
And broke her record. She shouted him out at the Grammys, bro.
Yeah. He's a good guy, man. And rightfully so, because I'm not a radio guy. I don't think so.
You got the voice.
Thank you. I appreciate
Deep Stroke Radio with King B. I could see it already. Got the females calling up. All right, this is King B. You're tuned in to Deep Stroke Radio, where we go deep. Who's on the line? This Janice from the West Side. All right, Janice, what you getting stroked tonight? Ooh, yeah, could you play Keep Sweat? It's a good and a right way to love somebody. All right, we got that coming up to you. Remember, this is King B, Deep Stroke Radio, when we go deep.
See, this is the shit. This is the reason why it's so hard to do movies with people like this. You know what I'm saying? Because, we're laughing half the time. But no, man, I was telling Lisa, I tried that shit for a month on the internet radio. And I was like, man, this shit, hell no. This is too much shit, man. No, I'm good.
Yeah, I think people think all we do is get on the radio and play. But there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of preparation, show prep, management. Of time, you got to be on time, got to get in and out of breaks on time, or else the company loses money because the commercial doesn't run on time. So at the end of the day, it's a discipline to it. And for a comedian, it's super tough because you don't get that reaction. It's like when we're on stage rocking a mic, the people are right there. We see them laughing. We see them smiling. We see them enjoying themselves. When you're on the radio, you have to have confidence that what you're saying is funny and people in their cars dying laughing because there's no immediate reaction. I mean, the people that are working with you, they might laugh, but you know that's part of the team. They're going to help you push the joke. But you're worried about that woman in the car driving her two kids to school, or you worried about that guy that's doing the bus route. You know what I'm saying? You wondering, are they listening and are they laughing? And that's the tough part about radio.
Yeah. And I've worked with probably just about every other the best comedians in Chicago. So I've gotten a chance to study comedy from afar. And one of the things people don't understand is when you do a show, when you do a set, they call it, a lot of times you have a lot of different sets coming up to it. Like, let's say a special. You have a lot of different small sets that you maybe go to a small comedy club and you're testing things out and you're working it out. By the time you get to the special, you probably put a year into it. And you know it works, you know it doesn't work. And you're getting the best, you know. But when you're on the radio or on a TV show 5 days a week, you know, you don't have that type of prep. And so you may be funny 5 days a week, but when you see someone do their set, and I'm going to say this, bro, I've been working with you for years. I've come to your shows where you were hosting, things of that nature. But when I saw you do your set, shit. Man, I was rolling. So I was laughing so hard. There are, because I work with so many comedians and we're laughing all the time, it's very hard for me to just consistently, I mean, to the point where tears are rolling down. It's very hard to get me there. And I'm telling you, man, I came to this one set that you did, and I was like, I did not know this dude was this funny. I knew you were funny, but I didn't know you were that fucking funny. It was just, I'm crying over here, man. It's hilarious. And I'm like, wow. You know what I'm saying? And I've known you for probably...
Oh, dude, you know me, but like, man, come on. Like, literally, shoot. Man, me and Nicole have been married, what? It's going on 20 years? At least 15, yeah. Bro. Easy. At least 15 years, solid. And I tell people, it's a delicate balance. And thank you for the compliment, first of all, first and foremost, man. Because it's tough, especially when you work on radio. Mm-hmm. Because the humor you're doing is spontaneous, off the cuff. And you're talking about the day's current events, right? Maybe a little nostalgia here and there. But when you're on stage doing a set, these are things that you have curated, you know what I'm saying, out of your personal life or what's going on. And sometimes I kind of feel like I'm behind the curve because everybody else is constantly hitting stages, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't get to hit the stage that much. So when I do hit the stage, it's kind of like, yo, it's like getting back in the gym. You know, you was one of the top hoopers in the nation. But you took off 3 or 4 years to teach. But now when you come back in the gym, it's like you see all these young hoopers in here. You see them getting up and doing their thing. And then it's like once you get back in the game, you're like, oh, okay, this is what it is. All right. And then you showing them stuff that they ain't never seen before as far as hooping. And that's what I kind of liken it to. Mm-hmm. The ability to adjust and adapt and get back on that stage and lose those butterflies. But then at the same time, I know a lot of those guys, when they come off the stage, it's tough for them to be funny on the radio because maybe they're used to using a certain language that you can't use. You know, I tell everybody there's clean comedy. Like, yeah, you got to be clean on the radio, but that also means subject matter. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't talk about giving head on the morning show when people got their kids in the car on the way to school.
Exactly.
Right? Now, if I'm clever enough to do some innuendo where the parents get it, but the kids have no idea what Mr. Leon is talking about on the radio, that's when the art comes in.
You know, which is interesting because a lot of the rap music for years have had, interesting subject matter. And yet, you guys still have to adhere to a clean type of delivery, you know what I mean?
Different day parts have to adhere to different things. So the morning show is probably the most watched because, like you said, everybody's getting up going to work, kids are going to school, parents have it on in the car. So Zach Boog, my brother who works from 6 to 10, can probably get away with more because if you're out, you're probably an adult that's out at 6 to 10 moving around, you know, or 10 to 2. So when I worked at Power 92, and me and DJ Ferris was on the air. We used to come on from 10 to 2, and it was called Hood Radio. And, dog, I'll say this, man. That late night show was one of the greatest late night shows in the history of Chicago radio. I put it right up there with Ramonski Love and Disco Dave, When Pink House used to come on, rest in peace to Disco Dave, when Pink House used to come on late, playing all the new rap tracks and stuff, and the Bad Boys, but they were 6 to 10. Like, Pink House and Bad Boys, they like 6 to 10. But that Ramonski Love Disco Dave show that used to come on late night on Fridays and Saturdays, I think we rivaled them. I think me and Ferris had one of the dopest shows on because he handled all the music and I handled all the bits. And it just worked. It was a symbiotic relationship. And it was super dope.
And that's important to have.
Yeah.
A good partner. You know?
Yeah. And you listen, you'd be surprised. There's some radio partners that if I told you they didn't really get along off mic, you wouldn't believe it. But because you listen to their show and it's like, damn, sound like they've been rocking together since childhood. But, you know, it's all about they can't stand each other. But I mean, me and Ferris had a great relationship, man, and we never stepped in each other's lanes. He had the ear to the streets for the pulse of the music. And he was like, dude, I'm going to let you be the comedian. And whatever you do, I'm following you. Like, if we get in trouble. And one thing he told me, he said, man, if we get in trouble, we get in trouble together. Let's go. I ain't going to leave you hanging out to dry. So we used to do all types of stuff. We had this little thing called when people would call in for tickets. We'd be like, man, you want these tickets to go see Gucci, man? Well, we need female nurses to take a temperature live on air. So, you know, nobody understood what we was talking about till one day we played a call back and dude was like, man, I'm here with my nurse right now. We was like, yeah, what's your nurse name? And then she said her name and he was like, she got the thermometer. She ready. She finna take my temperature. Oh. And then you could imagine the sounds you heard afterwards, right? But we gave him tickets, yo. And I couldn't, like, half of the stuff we did, dog, I can't believe we got away with it. But like I said, we would do it after the midnight hour. Because, see, from 10 to 12, you're still being watched kind of by the FCC. But from midnight to 2 in the morning, we thinking, ain't no kids up. If your kids up, they bad anyway. So it's whatever. Strippers in the studio, all that, man. But we made sure we kicked it off after 12. It's just straight up. Good times.
Well, we don't have to worry about the FCC over here, but we still have to pay these bills. So we'll be right back with Leon Rogers on Raw Fusion.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
If you want to check out some of our films, you can do so at patreon.com/KingB. And as always, King B's Raw Fusion podcast is sponsored by theindycity.com. If you like independent artists or independent products, or you're just independent like me, check out theindycity.com. theindycity.com.
Raw Fusion.
We go back to MySpace. This is a story about Leon Rogers working with King B. I had a movie called Intimate Friends.
Yep.
In that film, we had the legendary Herb Kent. And,
rest in peace.
And we had Prototype, goes by J. Marie, on the Flavor Love show on VH1.
Block Party Babe. She was a Block Party Babe also for my afternoon show, Block Party, the Block Party with Leon Rogers. Come on,
and that's how you knew her.
Yeah.
So you hit me up and said, listen, I saw the trailer. I saw a couple of people in there I know. Of course, I'm assuming that was Prototype and Herb.
Yep.
Hey, man, if you have anything coming up, let me know. And this is a testament to you, your grind, because a lot of people there on the radio, they don't do that kind of shit. You know what I'm saying? I think Roxy, she was on B96. She reached out to me, or somehow we got connected. I used to listen to all kinds of radio, and we started talking. But besides you two, you know, most radio personalities wouldn't do that kind of shit. And so what did I do? I said, hey, I'm working on this project, which was my next project, was the Penis Dialogues. He said, hey, man, come on down to the studio, you know, bring me a script. I did so, and shit, man, you was on my movie, and we've been working together ever since. So
that was fun. The penis dialogues was fun because it was really why did I get married and all those types of movies before they came out.
Yeah.
If we really want to sit back and dissect that, King B, that whole conversation, the men and women, it was like the Big Chill meets, you know, black folks. Because we was all sitting around talking at a barbecue and everybody had their own skewed perspectives on relationships and all that. You know what I'm saying? So when you sit back and look at that movie, and I encourage people, if there's somewhere y'all could get it from King B, check it out. That movie was all this stuff you see now from, you know, and it's no diss to the people that's making it now, but it's literally them films. The comedic element between me and Cookie.
Yeah.
And then you was the player with the chick, you know what I'm saying? You can't settle down. And then V. Cole and Tiffany was the couple, you know what I'm saying? So you had all those same elements. So I always thought that was Penis Dialogues was dope to me.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
One of the things about it was when I came up, it obviously is a play on the Vagina Monologues. And
right.
I'm saying, like, okay, I'm not finna do a bunch of people coming up talking about dicks. You know what I'm saying? What's the audience there?
That's what I mean. You my man, but I ain't want to do nothing like this, bro. I ain't want to break in the game. Like, I heard the stories about Hollywood, bro. I don't catch it this early. Like, fuck that.
Nah, so I was trying to figure out how the hell can we do like a male perspective, and that's how it came about, to flip it. And the interesting part, you know, one of the techniques I do is I give people the script and I don't give them any notes, you know, before the first read, table read. I did that with everybody. We did the table read and everybody had their parts. They knew who those characters were, everything without me saying anything. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I could work with these guys. Then we get to the set and you guys are going so well. I'm thinking in the back of my mind, do these people know I can direct? Because I had no notes. You know what I'm saying? It was... Well, I had been used to working with some people that may have been their first time. You got to coach them into it. You got to pull out. I had to do none of that shit with you guys. You guys had it all. And I'm sitting here like, these motherfuckers don't know I can direct.
Well, I think had three comics. Me, B. Cole, and Cookie were comedians, right?
Well, Cookie's kind of, she's the actress. She's but funny.
Well, actress, well, comedic actress. But
yeah.
And I think Tiffany had been in some stuff, you know, so she knew how to handle herself in front of a camera. And I think, if anything, if we want to go deep, that's a testament to your pick and talent. You know what I'm saying? Even though you didn't have to direct a lot, or you felt like we was doing everything the way we needed to, but that's testament as an eye for talent. Like, okay, you know, it's just like coaching a basketball team, bro. We can put the right, we can have five all-stars and the team could suck because there's no chemistry.
Right.
You know what I mean? But a good coach got a good eye, say, okay, I know what lineups to play that they going to mesh and we going to dominate. And I think that's kind of what you did with that whole little setup. And in some other films you did that, like, I missed out on, like, what was the gangster movie, man? Well, I did get a part in the second one. I was a drug dealer, and we wanted this Roost.
Roost 2.5. You were
2.5. Yes.
Yeah.
You and were I was pimp. Sitting at the dinner table with my guys, but that was
Wait. That was Hate Love. You've been in three of my movies. Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's right, Roost. I was a pimp.
You was Dollar Bill. Was your character.
Dollar Bill. And that's another thing I think I like too. Just because we was comics or radio personalities, you didn't just say, you got to be the silly motherfucker in the movie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, for me, when I try to get in films or somebody asks me to do something independent, the first thing I ask them, like, what's the role? Well, you this guy, you work at the butcher shop, but you always fucking up. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want something, you know, give me the role of a cop that's trying to catch these guys, or give me the role of a lawyer, of an attorney, or give me the role of a concerned father. Like, I want to try to test, I want to test myself. I know I can be funny in front of a camera. I ain't even worried about that. You know what I'm saying? But I want to know, can I do a scene that makes somebody cry? You know, after seeing cats like Jamie Foxx, Tom Hanks have success turning stand-up into Oscars, man, why would I want to just limit myself to being funny?
And that's interesting because some people, I've even had comics that may not agree, but I believe that comics are they make brilliant dramatic actors, because you guys think differently. You think so fast. And people ask, well, you know, I've had so many comics in my movies, and I've never really done a pure comedy. And
right.
I don't really have to, because you guys are so smart, you know, and you think so fast. You know, like I was saying with the, you know, 5 days a week thing, that's kind of like freestyling in rap. You know what I mean? There's the writtens and then there's freestyle. You guys can freestyle so quickly that it works for dramatic acting. You know, you guys think on several different levels that not all dramatic actors do. So I really like putting you guys in real situations, you know, real roles, because, you know, especially, you know, with guys like you, I can just give you the book and I don't have to talk to you anymore.
I think
it's done.
I think comics make great actors because our job is improv. So think about it. When a comic's on a stage telling jokes, he's telling a story. So he has to paint a picture and bring you in there. So he has to act out different things. I mean, let's use this for example. I always break it down. Kevin Hart joke about his dad coming to school in jogging pants, you know, at some function. And he said, Kev say he's sitting there. And the next thing you know, his father walk in. All right. All right. All right. All right. You know, like he gets into character. He's being right. His father in that moment. And I think, you know, no disrespect to regular actors because they practice on their craft, you know, reading monologues and stuff like that. But comics, I think every time we go on stage, we're improvising. We're being a character. We're being the auntie that told you to go get a pack of cigarettes. We're being the bus driver that tell you to sit your ass down. We emulate characters, which is easy for us to get in character. Now, some comics are better at it than others. You look at Jamie Foxx, who, when you saw Ray Charles, you saw Ray Charles. Like, it wasn't like Jamie Foxx playing Ray Charles. You was like, that's Ray Charles. If I had never seen Ray Charles before, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just the improv factor of it, I think it is for me. And if comics get a little bit of training, man, with it and enhance that, which I've, you know, Act One school, I've been trying because I literally love being in front of the camera. I love being behind the creative side of it too, but I love just testing my limits. Like what makes me nervous? What's not in my comfort zone that I need to try to conquer? Like, you know what I'm saying? Before, I used to be nervous about performing in front of all white crowds. So now I just started going up north and doing all the rooms. And when I said, oh, this shit is just as easy as performing for my people. And I'm not switching up my material neither. And mama, you know, so it's just all about testing yourself, man, and putting yourself out there. But people got to give you that chance. I think a lot of times comics get put in a box. Oh, he's a comedian, so everything we put him in, he got to be silly and funny. And then you get stuck there, and it's like, you know, the checks is good, but I want to branch out. It's got to be on you as the comedian. You might be okay with doing that, and I ain't mad at that. But for me, I want to test it. You know, I want to see what I can do. It's some roles I ain't gonna take. You know, I'm not gonna be the gay hairdresser, but that's my own personal reasons.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's nothing against gay hairdressers. Let me put that out there. That's just not something I'm comfortable with doing and I don't want to do. And I have my reasons for not doing that, and I keep that to myself. But, you know, I want to be a guy that was shot in Afghanistan, paralyzed in a wheelchair. You know, I want to do these different roles. You know, I want to be the man who's about to lose his newspaper stand to big business, and he's doing everything to fight it. I want to be the lawyer trying to get this guy off a murder charge. You know, I look at Aldis Hodge, who's not a comedian. He's an actor, but he went from playing Ren at NWA. Now he's like a district attorney right next to Kevin Bacon. Like, I want to do that.
Oh, wait. You know what? That's funny. I knew I'd seen that guy before. I couldn't
tell him he was Ren. He was Ren and straight out of Compton.
He was.
And now he's like playing opposite of Kevin Bacon as a district attorney in Boston. Like, I want the range. I want the range, fam.
All of those guys are doing well, by the way. They did a hell of a job on that. And that, you know, that's a testament to actors. But, you know, let's keep it 100. Directors, man. I think F. Gary Gray is the best director in Hollywood.
He's dope.
He directed Straight Outta Compton. He also did Set It Off and The Negotiator. You know what I mean? And he's behind the scenes, kind of, sort of. A lot of people don't know who he is, but he's a brother. He's killing it. You know what I mean? Every movie he does just about is, you know, Italian Job. You know,
I like
Runaway Hits. So
I like, you know. Now, you know who else I like?
Who's that?
I like Antoine Fuqua. Like him too. I mean, you think Tears of the Sun. I like that. He did The Equalizer too. And The Equalizer. He did Training Day.
Training Day.
And Olympus Has Fallen. So I like Fuqua too. And I like Coogler. I think Coogler is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, think of what he did with Black Panther.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I'm going to tell you what the test is going to be. The test is going to be what they do with Black Panther 2.
So, you know they've already said, I'm trying to think of what else Ryan did. He did Fruitvale Station and Creed. So he's got like three cats, and it looks like him and Michael B. Jordan have the relationship, you know what I'm saying, because he was in all three. Michael B. Jordan was in Creed, Fruitvale Station, and Black Panther. But I think with Black Panther already, they've said they're not going to recast T'Challa, which I don't have a problem with. My problem was people that were saying that they shouldn't do another Black Panther. I was like, no, Black Panther is necessary. That black superhero is necessary. Now, I can understand if you don't want to cast anybody as the role of T'Challa, but that doesn't stop the legacy of the Black Panther. The Black Panther was just the name bestowed on the protector of Wakanda. So that could be anybody. You could have another tournament and somebody could do it. Or like in the comic books, his sister could take over like she did for a little while, Siri. But my thing is, when they do put this new one out, however they do it, Black Panther is necessary, because I was having this argument with my boy who said they shouldn't redo it. I said, why not, man? When have you ever had a black superhero that white kids wanted to be?
Man, listen.
On Halloween, bro, I can't tell you how many little white boys walked up to our door in Black Panther costume. And I didn't get mad, because I'm like, you know, our baby's been emulating Batman, Superman, Green Lantern. About time we had somebody that they wanted to be. And I was okay with that. And I said, and think about it. Out of all of the superheroes, other than Superman and maybe Captain America, this is the first black superhero, man, loved his country, loved his people, cherished and worshiped his mother and father, didn't have any vices. He didn't gamble. He didn't drink. Was smart, intelligent, was a man's man, could fight combat, knew all different styles of combat, could handle himself in battle, and at the end of the day, wanted a queen to rule beside him. Come on, dog. That's the total antithesis which they try to paint us in the media and stuff today. Black man ain't shit. We don't take care of our kids. We don't do this. He ain't had none of that. He was just a badass motherfucker with a bunch of money, no vices, and was about that life.
Because it always has to come back to money.
Yeah.
Let's be real. That is the highest grossing standalone superhero movie.
$700 million.
No.
Worldwide, wasn't it?
No. It's way over $1 billion.
Really?
The only thing that beat Black Panther
Avengers
was the Avengers movie. But it's not a standalone. Okay. So standalone, it beat every single standalone movie ever. That's the highest grossing standalone superhero movie ever. You think they're not going to do another one?
Of course. Right.
When you catching a B, when you doing way over $1 billion,
yeah, that's crazy.
You're getting another one. I just want to see what they do with that switch, because it's kind of difficult. Like I'm going through it now. I want to do another Roost, but first everything has to open back up enough for me to be safe, or feel safe anyway. But unfortunately, we lost a couple of major cast members, and I don't want to recast them. You know, I want to honor what they did. So I'm going through it now, just figuring out the steps to move forward in the story without them. That's a difficult thing to do. So the test of Ryan Coogler's writing, his directing he's got. But the writing is going to be interesting to see how they move forward without Bro.
Yeah. And like I said, once again, I think there's so much going on in the Marvel universe that you can write that. Still pay homage to the legend of Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa. and move mm-hmm. on. Like, I could see the movie starting out that, you know, Chadwick, you know, whatever, something happened, whatever, whatever, in a fight, and he couldn't continue on, and now we have to find a new leader. And the movie could be about that. Or, for me, they could have did it as a prequel to Black Panther. They could have told the story of his father, T'Chaka, when he was young. Mm. Remember when T'Chaka came and rolled up and was like, yo, you betrayed Wakanda and all that? You could have talked about him, you know, his years before T'Challa was born, you know what I'm saying, before he became an old man. So one thing I hope they don't do, though, I hope they don't find a way to bring, and it's nothing against Michael B. Jordan, but Killmonger died.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want them to be like, oh, Killmonger came back to life. He's seen his bad ways, and now he's the new Black Panther. I'm not going to like that. I'd rather you go with the lane that Shuri takes over, or Lupita Nyong'o's character takes over as the Black Panther, because she was a spy. She was badass, too. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Or you know, the leader of the Dora Milaje, something. Even if you go the woman empowerment route, I'm okay with that. But, yeah, you know.
And you know people on the internet, they're talking about, you know, how can they bring Michael back? And it's like,
yeah, it's like, nah, man. And then give somebody else a chance, goddammit. Like, that's sometimes what makes me mad about Hollywood. They recycle the same people. And I'm not saying that they ain't dope, but let's see some new faces. You know what I mean? Well,
see, that's, you know, that's the problem with art versus business.
Uh-huh.
Because simply, you know, when you're talking about that much fucking money, I mean, hell, they're spending like $200-300 million on these fucking yeah. films before they even yeah. get any of that shit back. It's like, right. You know, and you got suits who aren't artists. And that's one of the reasons why, I'm still here in Chicago and not in LA. They're trying to get me out there, and I'm still like, hey, I don't know. You guys are, because, you know.
You try to change people. They try to change you when you get out there.
Man, listen, let me tell you something. Yeah, I know a lot of people in Hollywood, actually.
Right.
And,
a lot of the homies go out there to do comedy. Mm. And I be seeing some movies on late night at Showtime or Cinemax, and I'm be like, what? He's playing what? Mm. Oh, is the guy that bad, man? Oh, he put on the dress? Oh, okay.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
You know, I go hard on them dudes. They don't went to the dress. You know, even your boy Kevin said he'd never do it, and then
and did it on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, okay. He did. You know.
Okay.
I mean,
and I get. Listen, I get when everybody say it's character acting and all that. I'm like, but I look at the situation that my people are in.
Right.
Right. They can get away with it. Our situation, our men are looked at crazy.
Man,
right.
Listen.
So anything I can do to put forth a, because think about it, how many positive male black images we have in the movies, like except Black Panther, or just even on TV, like Cosby, where's the Cosby at? Where's the Martin at? Even though Martin was young and hip, he was a positive dude, had money, you know what I'm saying? Worked at a radio station, had a girl. They didn't have no baby out of wedlock or nothing. They was just two people kicking it, living in the city. They had a group of friends who all had jobs, was doing well for themselves. The Cosby Show, doctor and a lawyer living in the same house. Hell, the Jeffersons, black businessman living in the high rise. Hell, even Good Times, right? James ain't never asked nobody for shit. They lived in the projects, but he took care of his family even to his death. He died taking care of his family. You see what I'm saying? No nonsense. No, not even, what was the one, Family Matters with Steve Urkel, black police officer, lived in a nice neighborhood, nice neighbors. Where are those TV shows at for us now?
Man, let me tell you something.
What do we have?
I'm trying to keep you out of this conversation because I know you.
I've been working in this business long enough to know, King B, I know what to say and when to say it, but I'll give you enough where you know where I stand. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's not disrespectful to anybody because at the end of the day, I'm glad to see anybody win, right?
Right.
But I do feel certain things as a black man in this country, there's certain steps and feet, a foot I must put forward to let you understand this what it is. All right. Well, y'all come whatever y'all want to, but this is what it is when it comes to us and what I want Shorty to see. When I got picked to do Later with Leon, real quick story.
Go ahead.
When they asked me to do Later with Leon, I was so excited, bro. And they tried to put a co-host with me, and I was like, nah, I don't want her. I want this female. And it was a sister by the name of Tia Ewing. And they was like, well, you know, why you want her? I said, because I want our boys and girls to see that two dark-skinned people can be on a show on TV and it looks good and it sounds good. You understand what I'm saying? Because we get a lot of times the colorism thing, they be like, all right, well, we'll give you a co-host, but she got to be light-skinned or Hispanic. I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. This is what I want. I want them to see that a guy with no college education, no degree, can coexist with a black female journalist, both dark-skinned, both from the city of Chicago, so our babies can see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Now, it didn't work out for the... It's reasons why it didn't work out, like creative differences, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, I'm always wanting that narrative. I'm always wanting them to see people on TV who look like them.
Right. There's a lot of shit that goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't realize. You know, we had Georgia Fort on the show, and she was talking about, because she was on the radio in Minnesota, and then she transitioned to TV, and she was talking about her having a bad day getting to work one day, and her hair wasn't straight, and them telling her, well, we didn't give you permission to change your look, and if you come in here again like that, we're going to take disciplinary actions.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's just ridiculous. And people need to realize what I see. You know, I see a lot of things that other people don't, because I write this shit. I'm in this shit. You know what I mean? And the narrative that they keep consistently putting gay guys, guys in dresses. I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's...
Go ahead.
It is, but
no problem with
but
that.
But here's the thing:
in your life,
where's the balance?
Thank you.
You know, that's the key. You know, that's the problem I have with a lot of the music of today.
Bro, listen, hey man, I wish you could sit in some of our meetings where I say like, hey, you know, be nice to hear Self Destruction or Bonita Applebaum early in the morning, or maybe something by. You know, I get it. We got to play Migos. We got to play Pooh Shiesty and Lil Durk. I ain't mad at that, right? Because that is Durk from the city or whatever. All right, but can we come back with something from Kendrick Lamar, Common, J. Cole, artists that the era that we came up in, King B, you think about it, the 80s. Just like how you said you listen to all types of music. It ain't no secret to that. Look at all the people who were born when we were born in the 70s on down. We had the disco era, the house era, juke era, hip-hop, new wave, grunge. All this came within the late 70s, 80s to 90s, right? So we listened to everything, and there was a balance. Yes, you could hear Fuck the Police from N.W.A., right? But then you could also hear 911 is a joke. Same message delivered a different way, right?
Fight the power.
You have balance. So you can hear, bitch better have my money. But then you could also turn around and get I Used to Love Her played on his. You know, he talking about hip hop. You see what I'm saying? So there was a balance. One,
poor righteous teachers, all of that.
Man, come on, bro. Stop playing. I think now the artist is just cookie cutter rap. It's easy. I literally told me and Kyle were having this conversation the other day. I said, Kyle, we could get into the studio on some joking shit and make a trap song that would go crazy in the club.
Oh, yeah. Easy.
On some joke shit. And the era when we was coming up in the 90s, you couldn't joke with hip-hop. You get called out. Yo, that's trash. But
wait a minute.
Now,
man.
We could literally do some joke shit and go crazy.
We had a couple of joke records now, let's be honest.
Okay, name them. And I'm going to show you.
Because I got high. Whatever. Yeah.
Because I got high. But
that
look,
was a joke record.
It was a joke record. But look at the lyrics. Go back and read the lyrics of him. He was actually rhyming. He had dope rhymes. Yeah. The concept of the song was a joke. Hell, jump is a joke song. The Mac Daddy make you jump. His cross will make you jump. That was corny. But If you go back and look at their lyrics, they was rapping.
Yeah.
They weren't talking about killing nobody. They weren't talking about shooting nobody. It was a party record. Yeah, I get it. We all had goofy stuff in each era. Yeah. You had party records in each era. You had records that, I wish I was a little bit taller, but look how it was comical, but it was a party record. Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking, what I mean by jokes, like it has no substance. It's just you repeating the same thing over. It's literally rap songs out now where guys be like, what they can't think of a road to rhyme, they be like, well, I'm sounding on grand, man, I'm sounding riding bay, drinking champagne every day, man, I'm sounding on bay. Like, what the fuck, bro? But just because it's got a slamming bass line and heavy bass, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And so I hate to be that guy, you know what I mean? I want to like...
Me too. Get off my lawn. Yeah. I'm around.
I want to like these. I want to like these young... But it all sounds the same.
But, and King, I like some... Don't get me wrong. I rocks with Lil Baby. I rocks with Moneybagg Yo sometimes. The problem I have is all that shit sound... If you don't know the artist, you can't differentiate who is who.
At all.
And back when we came up, you could tell everybody had a distinct sound. Common sounded nothing like Gangsta. KRS-One sounded nothing like MC Hammer. MC Hammer sounded nothing like BBD. Now everybody sounds the same.
The minute they came on, you knew who it was.
Man, and like you was
lit. The second their voice was talking. Yeah.
DMX, look. Unique. Tupac, unique. Biggie, unique. Big Pun, unique.
Matter of fact, if you sounded like someone else,
you got killed.
You was kicked out.
You got
it was
crucified.
Over with.
Shine got crucified. Oh, yeah, Gorilla Black got crucified for sounding like Biggie. They got killed for sounding like Biggie.
Yeah,
but
man,
they was dope.
Oh man, that one record he had was
Bad Boy.
Massive.
Whoa. Massive.
I still bump that shit every now and then.
Come on, man. But we know what it is. I mean, we know what it is. I don't get into
the
whole...
It's corporate. Yeah. It's corporate bullshit. Let's keep it 100.
It's coin over community. It's coin over community at times. You know what I'm saying? But that's why I feel like when we get in these positions and we hold them down, it is our duty to put our message out without losing the platform. Can you kind of understand what I'm saying? Because I get into it with people all the time. They talk shit to me, oh, this, you on the radio, this, that, do this and do that, do that. And I say, well, first of all, I'm not gonna say that we don't hold some culpability in what happens out here. But I say, but at the same time, are you parenting your children? Because I work for said station that you talk about, try to talk crazy about. But it's funny how my kids ain't out here doing that shit.
Right.
They ain't out here wilding out.
I mean, what's important, we got to understand, to your point, we got to understand one thing, you know, just like the WAP song, you know.
Right.
And I was on social media saying, listen, I don't like the beat. It's not what they're talking about. I just don't like the beat. I think they could have, because that's a house record, basically.
Right.
And you could have done a better
Ski.
Job.
Shout out to
beat.
Frank Ski.
There you go. So my thing is this, there should be adult records. The problem is you're letting your 5-year-old child listen to adult records.
right.
It's not the problem with the record. It's the problem with you not saying, okay, this I got to turn off. But no, you turn it up. You know what I mean?
My kids listen to BTS, K-pop, video game music. They listen to stuff that children should be listening to. Or they listen. They know the soundtrack to Grease, the soundtrack to The Wiz, because that's what their mama listened to. And my 8-year-old, when she's in the car with me, she's spitting Rakim word for word, because that's what her daddy listens to. So for the people that talk all crazy to me, because I DJ too, right? And you'd be surprised how many people try to criticize the radio station for what they play. But when I'm in the club, they the first one to run up and ask for, let me hear that new Migos. Let me hear that new King Von, Crazy Story 2.0. And I said, if you asking me for it in here, I know you listen to it in front of your children. You're not even finna sit up here in front of me and act like you cut it off when they get in the car. You turn up to it when they in the car. So, at the end of the day, we all are products of our environment to a certain extent. Some of us just learn how to break from the grasp of the negative stuff. But we all have influences from our environment.
Shit, man, we listen to all kind of gangsta.
Come on,
gangsta rap was invented when we came up. That doesn't
Ghetto
mean
Boys.
We went out to the Yeah.
Ghetto Boys.
NWA. All of them motherfuckers came out when we were coming up. Like, it's like, dude, like, you know, you have to learn that there's a separation. And if you're going to listen to these things, it should be a teachable moment.
Yep.
You know, this is how this works. Like when I was younger, you could look at the hood, and I grew up in the hood.
Yeah.
But I also went to school, you know, I went to private schools. So I got to see both. And the teachable moment is you can be this or you can aspire to be that.
That. Absolutely, brother.
Now, what do you want
to
do?
I live in 9817 South Loomis. Shout out to Washington Heights, right? I went to Quigley South. Went to all boys Catholic school, right? And they ended up going out to Eisenhower out in Blue Island. But my father, he's like, I can't control what you listen to when you leave out here. I had to hide my Too Short tapes and stuff out in a bag outside behind the garage because when he found them in my room, he tore them up. He's like, you're not going to listen to that in here. We not doing that. Now, my Tribe Called Quest and stuff, he didn't bother. But he knew the ones that I shouldn't be listening to. But when I walked outside and put it in my Walkman, yeah, I'm listening Straight Outta Compton. Yeah, I'm listening to Ghetto Boys. I'm listening to Kool G Rap. I'm listening to all that Too Short, all that hardcore stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think then, more or less, the rappers back then were telling the stories of the streets. I think now, the streets, the rappers are trying to be the streets when they all of them not really like that.
No.
They're not reporting anymore. They're literally trying to glorify a lifestyle. And these shorties, you know, it's like the life is influencing the rapper so much. You know, everybody a rapper now. Everybody a rapper.
And like you said, they're not really living that lifestyle. But you listen to the music and think, well, that's the way to be. And they ain't even that way. But look, we need to take one more break. And we'll be back. More Leon Rogers right here. It's Raw Fusion. TheIndieCity.com. If you like independent clothing brands, independent art, or just things that are independent, then check out TheIndieCity.com. There's clothing, art, and more all right there at TheIndieCity.com. TheIndieCity.com. TheIndieCity.com is a proud sponsor of the King B Raw Fusion podcast. Previously on Raw Fusion.
I went to a slumber party, and I guess the girl's family was taught that Jewish people were the devil. So one of her siblings, who was a little younger, had to be like 5 or 6 maybe, literally asked me where my horns were.
Don't miss a minute of King B's Raw Fusion. Make sure you subscribe for free to King B's Raw Fusion podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Raw Fusion.
I think we do a lot of talking about the rappers, and they do have to have responsibility. But what this all comes down to is corporate influence. You know, when you have what Dame Dash calls culture vultures in the industry, you know, it's about the money. Okay, let's get to the lowest common denominator and repeat that. It's like a fucking factory. You know, when I did TV, and one of the reasons why people don't understand why I left TV, you know, I'm on a broadcast network. Why would you leave? And one of the things was, listen, I love film because every film is a new world. With TV, the goal is, and I completely understand it, and I'm not mad at it. The goal is find out what works and keep doing that shit until it doesn't work. It makes sense. You know what I mean? When you looked at Soul Train, you can set your watch to the time that Scramble Board, when that came on. You can set your watch to it. It came on at the exact same time just about every week. And that was the key. And that's the reason why I stayed on for so long. One of the longest running shows in television history. The key is find out what works and keep doing that shit. Me, my creativity bothers me when I keep doing the same shit over and over and over again. That's the reason why I left TV. I want to do something different, and film gives me that. That's an artist. But when you have corporate entities, their objective is to find out what works, find out what sells, and sell a shitload of it. So that's now crept into the art, whereas we do, all we have is fucking superhero movies because they sell. So you're getting a shitload of superhero movies. And then with the rap, you know what I mean? Okay, well, one style works. Everybody do that style. You know, and that's annoying to me as an artist and a curator of art to keep having the same shit fed to me every day. That's like eating the same food every fucking day. But, you know, that's what it is, and I understand it. You know, the converse is when you want to put out a message and, okay, so one guy gets in a dress. Let's put another guy in a dress. Let's keep putting all these guys in dresses. Let's make them all gay. What you're saying is, again, that's what you are, that's what you are. But what you're saying, you're creating a narrative that if someone from a foreign country comes and that's all they see, then they're going to say, oh, well, they're all like that. You know what I mean? Give me a balance and I'm okay. You know, give me a balance and let me see someone speaking conscious rap. And then you can have, you know, gangster shit too, you know. And I might listen to it, I might like it. You know what I mean? Give me the upstanding gentleman and then, you know, do your mob movie. You know, I do mob films. But that was because people kept asking me to do the shit. You know what I mean? People don't know the thing about Roost. And shameless plug, you can catch all of these movies on patreon.com/KingDick.
Yo, I say that same thing when I have a conversation back and forth with some of my female co-workers and stuff about women in hip hop. I say, well, you know, I say it's funny. I said, I'm not trying to ruffle no feathers, but I say it's funny how we talk about the misogyny and crazy stuff we say about women in hip hop, which is absolutely true. I think it's a problem. I think it's been a problem. But then you all turn around and praise Meg and Cardi for WAP, saying it's sexual liberation. Which one is it? You can't have it both ways. If it's whack, it's whack all the way around. Don't say when a guy says it, it's whack, but when the girl said it's, oh, it's okay now. You know, I want my daughter to hear this message that it's okay to throw your vagina around. I'm just saying we got to be consistent. We got to find a level and be consistent. Like, I don't really like, you know, be this and H that. I don't think it takes any lyrical creativity to rhyme. You know what I'm saying? At least have colorful wordplay with it. You know what I'm saying? But most of your top-notch MCs that can really rap don't have to resort to that. But once again, they don't get the love. They was like, well, females can only win if they talk about sex. So that's not true. Rhapsody is dope as fuck. But when her album drops, y'all won't buy it because she's speaking on uplifting and pro-black this and women being this. Y'all won't buy it. And even Cardi B and them have said that. They was like, y'all always tell women to stop rapping about sex, but when we don't, you don't buy the album. And she's 100% right.
Jay-Z had a line. Truthfully, I be rapping like Common Sense. And he said, how many of a million records? And I ain't been rapping like Common Sense.
What I'm saying? Right.
They gave him a lot of shit for 444, but they're going to praise.
It was dope.
A lot of lessons.
The only thing that bothered me about 444, King B, is like the older people that was like showing it love, I was like, so KRS-One and Chuck D and all them wasn't saying these same things, but now your favorite rapper says it. This is groundbreaking. That's the only problem I had with 444. I'm like, there are rappers that have been rapping about this shit, and like Justice Cold, right? You get the Edutainment album by KRS-One, right? You get Chuck D, Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. You get X-Clan. These was all rap. Paris. These are all guys that was Black Power movement and rapping about Black Power. Even Pop with some of his rhymes. But now Jay starts talking about investing and all that, and this is groundbreaking. That's the only thing. I love the album, but I just hated I'm all about consistency. I hated the people that was trying to make it seem like he did something groundbreaking. I said, no, he expounded on and brought to light what people been writing about a long time ago. But because it's Jay, y'all fucking with it.
It's not the album that you have a problem with. It's not the work. It's the,
people
reaction that people have to.
Right, right. The album was dope. The album was cold to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to No ID on the beats. He was killing.
No ID. No Man. ID. You coming on the show, bro. Like, you know, we went to high school together. And but he doesn't like doing interviews. But I'm gonna get back in touch with him. but because he needs to come on the show. He's notoriously doesn't do interviews.
But sometimes I can't blame people for that, King B, man, because people take your words, and it's not even you. Let's just say I say something on here. Somebody hears the podcast. They'll take a 15-second clip and try to define my whole existence from that 15 seconds. So I get it why some people, you know, we just had that happen with us with Irv Gotti. Irv Gotti came on our show, talked about the passing of DMX. He told numerous stories about how close him and DMX was, and even through all his demons, DMX did this and did that and did this. But then when he reported on the cause of his death, he drove the internet nuts. People was going off on him, and I was like, y'all took that one 20-second clip and ran with it. When the man said he had nothing but the utmost respect for DMX, he loved him, but we know what it is. I don't know why people act like that. I think black folks are the only people that do that. Yo, your uncle who's been on heroin for 30 years was found dead in the alley. But, you know, in the funeral, y'all trying to say COVID took him out of here. No, goddamn well COVID ain't taking him out. He had two needles in his arm when they found
it. Right.
Well, wasn't no COVID infected needles. He OD'd. We get it. Ain't nothing to be embarrassed of. Nine times out of ten, black folks got a junkie in their family or somebody that just ain't doing right out here on some BS. It's like the same little dudes that be out here thugging, wilding out. Then when they get killed, everybody want to put them on a t-shirt and be like, man, you know, he really loved music. He was out here sticking people up, fam. Robbins. What do you think? Right. What music was he listening to when he took that lady Kyle 79?
That is a whole nother conversation. I'm not getting into that. But I want to say, see, people love this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The story about Roos is this. Roos was a 5-minute, I think it was Fox. They were doing something like an American Idol for directors. The submission process was a 5-minute film. And I'm thinking like, okay, what can I come up with that's interesting that I can tell a full story in 5 minutes? Okay, what about a hitman that gets hit by his own organization? And, you know, I went through a few things and I went through that and, hey, that makes sense. So I did that. I put it in there. Now, previously, I'd done Intimate Friends, a Love Story, Penis Dialogues, which is kind of like a dramedy. And in place of the trailer, you know, when we would do like screenings of the film, I put the 5-minute because, you know, the show didn't go anywhere. I think they did like one season and they canceled it or something like that, or a couple of shows and it was off air. So, you know, I had this whole little 5-minute thing. I wanted people to see it. So I put it in front of the film. I think it was Intimate Friends. And I had so many people come up to me and say, yeah, Intimate Friends, that shit was cool. Yeah, man, that was good. When the gangster movie coming out? What that gangster shit. Now, mind you, this is an hour and a half film, and you're still stuck on the first 5 minutes of the shit that you saw. Literally, so many people, again, MySpace people were like, you know, damn, when is that coming out? Like, that's the film, Joe. Like, you know what I'm saying? And they're like, no, come on, man. It's got to be. So I went and did, I filled it out. I used that first 5 minutes, cut it down to 4:30. And then added more to it and made it the movie. And it's the top selling one. You know what I mean? Love Story? Yeah, nah. I mean, it went, but the gangster movie went quicker than the other ones, and that's why we did another one. At some point, we got to be, you know, conscious of what we buy. If you don't want to see that kind of shit, don't buy it. Don't ask for it.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you don't want to hear gangster rap, don't buy it. I guarantee you, if you stop buying the shit that you complain about, the industry is going to respond with something else. But as long as you keep buying the shit and downloading and watching and, you know, looking at fight videos and clicking on this and clicking on bullshit, they're going to keep giving you bullshit because it's a numbers game. You know what I mean? This is a business and people need to understand that. So if you want to change what you're listening to, listen to something else.
No doubt.
Watch something else. No doubt. Hey, man, listen, this can go on all
day.
You got shit to do.
this good stuff, though. I think more conversations like this need to be had. More platforms need to be. And that's how I kind of try to do later with Leon. If you all get a chance, we're on a new time now. Starting Monday, we'll be on at 7 o'clock Central. So we're kicking off the prime time hours. And they moved me. I was on at 9 out here, but now I'm on at 7 out here. So
7 Central.
Yes, yeah, 7 Central.
All over the world.
Yeah, so seven central
time,
5 Pacific, and 8 East Coast. So, so I think just the conversations, man, and just talking, sipping on a little something. Like I said, you know, we live in a cancel culture now, which I think is totally bullshit. When you not be able to express your feelings and it not be called hate, like comics now even scared. Unless you Dave Chappelle and you punch your own ticket. Like, even comics now, man, you got to be mindful of what you say and what you do. And next thing you know, people are trying to cancel you saying you spewing hate. You're not spewing hate. I'm giving my opinion. And that's all
shit,
it is.
Shit, he's dancing. They even got him dancing now. So
it's man, like, bro.
You know, people, listen, they want a monolithic type of existence. And
one
that
mindset.
Is not good.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
I'm not
right, bro.
So I probably say a lot of shit on this podcast, and I'm going to continue saying a lot of shit that you probably never heard before, and that's just going to be what it is. If you like it, tune in. If you don't tune in, because I guarantee you somebody likes it because they're listening. So, you know, fuck off if you don't like me. You know what I'm saying? I really don't give a shit. I'm independent, goddammit. I don't have to punch in the wife's clock.
You can catch me on Deep Stroke Radio with King B. Man.
See, this is the problem. Hey, you know what? I don't have to talk to this guy for a year, two years.
I'm telling you, man.
And it's just like we talked yesterday.
King, I swear, tell me that shit wouldn't work. A late night talk show, you only have guests on of like a sexual or like sex experts, former porn stars, and then you just go into music that people like to bone to and call it Deep Stroke Radio with King B. Boy. And then your radio cover, like the thing that they got to show you, promote you. You got you doing the D'Angelo, How Does It Feel? You ain't no shirt on with some gold chains on and just like covered in water.
Oh, man.
Hey, man, when it happened, I just want 10%. That's all.
Hey, you in radio. You tell the people over there.
Okay. Now when you get a dough knock. And they be like, "Hey, King Ben, don't be like, oh, I thought, cause I will pitch it, bro.
Go on, pitch it.
I'm on some producer shit now. I'll pitch anything. Shout out. You know who you need to have on here?
Who?
I don't know if you know her name. Is Glamazon Tyomi.
No.
She's a beautiful individual. She's a certified sex therapist, but she's just like a great person. Someone that gives me a lot of clarity when we talk. I have conversations with her about the whole gay, lesbian, LGBTQ, what to say, what not to say. And she gives great perspectives on it. And she keeps it real because she's, you know, she messed with that crowd over there heavy, man. You know what I'm saying? She's doing big things. But she also teaches us who are not up on the lingo and everything how to say stuff without being offensive. And she also puts them in check saying, look, y'all being too sensitive. Motherfucker ain't say nothing detrimental against y'all. Y'all on some bully stuff now. So I love her to death, and anytime I talk to people that are in media, you know, I tell them to talk to her. My man Domati Pongo, who's a very young up and coming reporter, he works for MTV now. He's from Chicago, man. Just all good people. I believe in connecting folks, man, and making everybody's platform work.
Link it. You know what I mean?
I got you.
Hey, man, I know you got a lot of work to do, so man, I appreciate you coming through the show.
Yeah,
bro, working with you. For all these years, man, I really appreciate you. You're a hell of a talent. I just want to see you win, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I see you're winning, but, bro, you got way, way bigger things ahead. And I want to appreciate you, man. You're a good brother.
Man, I appreciate it, man. And I think we should all give each other our flowers while we're here. You yourself, accomplished director, been doing things out here in the city. And if people don't know, they need to check out a lot of your movies. King B been around a long time. You're one of the OGs. And it's good to see people that you come up with in the game, you know, still flourishing. And I never want to be that guy to be like, man, he was great after he was gone. So appreciate your platform, man. Like I said, you already know what it is, man. Phone call away, man. Just hit my line. I'm there. You know, I'm always looking to get in front of somebody's camera and do something great, be a part of something creative. So say less on that.
Damn right. We got more work to do.
It's time to talk some shit with King B on the King B's Raw Fusion Podcast. Brought to you by theindycity.com.
Well, we have certainly talked a lot of shit today already. They say directing is a lot of it is casting. And when I look to work with different people, I look for good people. Do you always get the greatest people? No. But many times you do. And that's really important. When working with comedians, be prepared to laugh a hell of a lot while you're on set. I'm King B, and this is Raw Fusion.
Raw Fusion.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.